Does this have too much feedback? Is this okay? Okay. Perhaps to make clear where we are, I want to summarize what we were talking about last time when we compared the signals of the various kinds and their receptors. And we said that there are two basic classes of signals. They're lipid-soluble and water-soluble. And the lipid-soluble signals all have receptors that are inside the cell and are the transcription factors. But the water-soluble signals have three kinds of receptors. They're either channels, or they're tyrosine kinase-linked receptors, or close relatives, or they are linked to G-proteins, in which case they're called G-protein-coupled receptors, or G-protein-linked receptors. And what we want to do today is first we want to talk about this combination, how lipid-soluble signals like thyroid hormone are received, and then we want to talk about how water-soluble signals use G-protein-coupled receptors. And we're going to leave the other two until later. So if we go back to this issue of lipid-soluble ligands and their receptors, there are a couple of important things about the ligands that I think we said last time, but I want to repeat so we don't forget, that lipid-soluble ligands have to be made when they're needed. They cannot be stored. And the reason for that is because they are lipid-soluble, they diffuse through membranes. So you can't put them in a vesicle, they would just diffuse away. Now this is in contrast to water-soluble signals, which are generally made in advance, put into a vesicle, and stored. And then when you need the signal, you release the vesicle's contents. But with lipid-soluble signals, you make them when you need them. And they leave the cell in which they're made, and then they have to travel through the blood, if they're a hormone, to reach their target. Now, since they're lipid-soluble, they can't just diffuse through the blood. And they have to be connected to some kind of carrier protein. So they're always bound to protein. Now, a small amount of the lipid is always diffusing, is always coming off and back on this protein. So there's always a small amount of free lipid available to diffuse into the target cell and bind to its receptor. And that's now what we want to concentrate on. What do those receptors look like, and how do they work? Well, the receptors for lipid-soluble signals, mostly hormones, are transcription factors, and they are, in fact, these some of the regulatory transcription factors that we've talked about already. Now, you may remember that all these transcription factors have at least two domains. That if they're going to bind to DNA, they have a DNA binding domain. And this determines exactly what DNA sequence they will stick to, and therefore which genes they will affect the transcription of. So let's draw a gene. And let's say this is the actual transcribed part. Transcription starts here. And then the regulatory part upstream, you have the core promoter and the proximal regulatory elements and perhaps some distal regulatory elements. Well, the sequence that these receptors bind to is usually near the core promoter, what we've called the proximal regulatory elements. That is, that if this gene is going to be transcribed, if this gene is going to make its respective protein in response to hormone, then there has to be a site here where the transcription factor binds. And this is usually called a hormone response element. It's a sequence in the DNA that matches the DNA binding site. And any gene that's going to be regulated by this transcription factor is going to have this sequence in front of it. Now, it's not enough to bind to the DNA. If the transcription factor binds to the DNA, that alone won't do anything. The transcription factor now has to affect transcription. So the left domain here is always the transcription affecting domain. And if this is a transcription factor that activates transcription, this is called the transcription activating domain. So this is the domain that binds to other proteins and affects transcription. It's also sometimes called the transacting domain. And this depending on the situation, this and the type of transcription factor, etc., this transcription factor can either inhibit transcription or activate transcription. Now, if this is going to be a transcription factor that only works in response to hormone, there has to be one other domain here, because this transcription factor has to bind hormone. And so this part is the hormone or ligand binding part. So when hormone or lipid-soluble ligand comes along, it binds to this domain, changes the shape of the receptor, causes it to become an active transcription factor, and we either increase or decrease transcription of the target genes. Now, if this is a transcription factor, it has to have at least one other thing in it. Where does a transcription factor do its business? What part of the cell? Where's transcription? In the nucleus. So this thing has to get into the nucleus to be of any use at all. So it's going to have a nuclear localization signal. So where would this protein be made? It would be made in the cytoplasm, not on the rough ER. It would be made in the cytoplasm, and when the nuclear localization signal is either present or uncovered, this protein will move to the nucleus. Now, some of these receptors hang out in the cytoplasm, and some of them go to the nucleus, bind to the DNA, but they don't do anything until the hormone comes along. The ones that wait out in the cytoplasm, when the hormone comes along, that changes the shape and binds. That changes the shape of the receptor that exposes the nuclear localization signal, which was there all the time, and the protein then goes to the nucleus. For the receptors that hang out in the nucleus already, the nuclear localization signal is read right away before the hormone comes. The protein goes to the nucleus, and there it waits for the hormone. So let's consider, yeah. Well, his question is, why don't you call this the part that affects transcription? This section determines what genes the protein will sit in front of. But it's this part that determines whether you're going to increase transcription, inhibit transcription, et cetera. Clearly, you have to have all of it to have any effect. If that's what you're thinking, that's correct. Now, let's consider what would happen when the hormone came along. So the first thing, of course, is that the hormone has to bind to its receptor. And usually the first thing that happens is to remove an inhibitor. Now, what we mean by this is that most of these receptors are bound to inhibitors in the absence of hormone. And what the hormone does is to bump the inhibitor. Notice this is another case of where inhibition of an inhibitor gives you a stimulation. So we inhibit the inhibitor, we get rid of it. And then these receptors generally dimerize. One peptide can't affect transcription. They have to come together in pairs before they can do anything. Now, in order to do anything, they have to enter the nucleus and bind to the appropriate hormone response element. Some of them are already there. But for receptors that are in the cytoplasm, then, if they're in the cytoplasm, they move to the nucleus. And if they haven't bound to DNA already, they bind to the DNA. Now, the final stage is once the receptor has bound to the DNA, it is now able, because it's bound hormone as well, to influence transcription. So this domain of the protein, which would be the amino end, the transacting domain then binds to other proteins in the polymerase complex and either inhibits or activates transcription. Now, clearly, if a gene doesn't have the appropriate response element, then the presence of this transcription factor will make no difference, because the transcription factor can't sit down and can't affect transcription of this particular gene. Now, I would like to give an example of how a steroid hormone could produce its effects, or what kind of things get done using this procedure. And the thing I want to use is estrogen. Estrogen is the female steroid hormone. Now, estrogen has many effects on many tissues. Some tissues aren't affected at all. Now, why would some tissues not be affected at all? They wouldn't have the transcription factor. They would have the gene for the receptor transcription factor, but they wouldn't make the receptor. So if there's no receptor, you don't get any response. But among the cells that have receptors, you get varying responses. And one of the common things that estrogen does is to stimulate transcription of genes that code for receptors for other hormones. So estrogen up or down regulates the production of receptors and therefore sensitivity to other hormones. So to give an example, during pregnancy, estrogen affects both the uterus and the breast. And in the uterus, it causes the upregulation of oxytocin receptors. And in the breast, it causes downregulation. So that's up. This is, we'll just say, downregulation of prolactin receptors. Now, what do we mean by upregulation? We mean that it increases transcription of message for the corresponding protein. You make more receptors, you're more ready to respond. By downregulation, we mean you inhibit transcription and you make less of the corresponding receptor, so you're less sensitive. Now, oxytocin and prolactin are two hormones involved in various stages of pregnancy, lactation, etc. In this context, in the uterus, oxytocin is responsible for stimulating contractions and maintaining contractions which allow you to bear the baby. Prolactin, on the other hand, is needed for the synthesis of milk. It's needed for milk production. A different hormone is needed for milk release, but this one is needed for milk production. Now, why does this system make sense? Estrogen causes the uterus to make oxytocin receptors. Now, oxytocin isn't there yet, but when the time comes for birth, you want to have a lot of oxytocin receptors so that when oxytocin is made, the uterus will contract and expel the baby. So estrogen is triggering the uterus to make receptors to be ready for when the time comes. Now, on the other hand, you want the breast to make milk, but only after you have a baby. You don't want to do it in advance. And so the breast, you want the breast to be unresponsive to prolactin.